podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello there, my name is Miles Jupp, and I'm just interrupting you as you listen to whatever it is that you actually want to listen to tell you about the second series of Middle Please Umpire. Middle Please Umpire is a podcast that I, Miles Jupp, if you weren't concentrating when I first introduced myself only moments ago, that's not a criticism, your thoughts are your own and you must focus them wheresoever you yourself choose, host with Mark Wood, the 95-mile-an-hour bowling, England-playing, World Cup-winning, Northumberland-hailing cricket lunatic Mark Wood. It's another series of episodes of the two of us talking about cricket and indeed any other stuff that springs to mind, both with each other and also with a succession of frankly illustrious guests. We lift the lid on Mark's life as an international sportsman, basically he spends a lot of time icing himself, and take you on a whistle-stop journey through the windmills of his mind. I, a mere fan, listen agog, giggle excitedly, and try and draw comparisons with my own rather more mundane existence. All episodes of Middle Please Umpire are available right now from your favourite podcast providers.
Hello and welcome to this very special edition of the Manchester United Redcast. Yes, it's an emergency podcast with me, Chris Curley. And joining me, we're very special to have the man who went quick, we've got to have a podcast last night. We've got to have a podcast. He even sent a voice note about it. Aaron Paul is with us. And of course, Dan the Man Riley, who actually looks like he could be in an episode of The Bill today. As some kind of DC detective. Well, we're going to kind of investigate the goings-on of the last 48 hours, which have been incredible in the world of football. Aaron, where do we start? What's your reaction? Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, never. I mean, no. I've never seen football Twitter unite. Rivalries disband, like, just temporarily to sort of to get rid of this toxicity, this cancer. And you know, I spoke to a historian on the radio last night and I said, can you liken it to like the fall of Europe? And she goes, absolutely. She goes, this is like the end of the World War where everyone just started caving. Like it was absolute. The events of last night will never be repeated. But I link it all back to one thing. And I'll take it back to 2014 when I was applying to do a journalism degree. A University of the Arts London, and I was asked to do 1,000 words on something sport-based, something easy, something light. Keep it simple, nothing extraordinary, nothing controversial. And I thought, right, I can go about this two ways. I can either be bland as fuck and do like a match report on Swindon versus Accrington, or I can write something hard-hitting. I thought, yeah, I'm going to write something hard-hitting. And I think my article that I wrote 7-8 years ago is proven yesterday. My article's headlined, Why Real Madrid Are the Cancer of Football? Because Florentino Perez is cancer. The man is a parasite. He should be hung. He is an absolute disgrace. Even looking at him makes me feel sick, yeah? He belongs in an Indian drama on a channel that no one fucking knows about. The guy's a disgrace. Joel Glazer is a disgrace. John W. Henry, we've seen him scrambling this morning. The little yank.
We'll come on to the hostage video, which to me felt like he was also trying to sell funeral insurance.
Absolutely.
It was like, which he might be for his own future at Liverpool.
But don't you think he looks like Sammy Lee? Just like...
Well, like Sammy Lee, who's gone on the, you know, slim fast diet. It's like...
Just an ill Sammy Lee, basically. He just looks a bit ill, doesn't he? I mean, like... But, you know, he's had to come out and do that because he's shitting himself that Klopp's going to walk, considering the Bayern Munich job's coming up, the Germany job's coming up, Real Madrid job's probably coming up, the Barcelona job's probably coming up. Tottenham, well, no.
Well, arguably, you know, the announcement cost them 2 points and jeopardy their top four place.
There you go.
You know, with the draw against Leeds on Monday night. Dan, yesterday, it seemed to, like, be a whole cascade of information. And for me, Pep Guardiola had his press conference at lunchtime where he said, well, he was asked for his initial opinion, Dan, and said, "Sport, it's not sport without merit or reward," which was like as close as you go, coming out going, this is terrible. And like Klopp on Monday night, kind of maintaining his views of what we always know about Super League, what we talked in the last podcast, Pep started this thing that kind of rolled on into the rest of Monday night, last night rather, which then got to Chelsea and the Chelsea fans outside Stamford Bridge, which took Peter Cech, their legendary goalkeeper, to come outside without wearing his skull cap, which I thought was dangerous, right, for his own safety, to tell them all to go home and saying we're dealing it. And between 6:30 and 8:00, it was a domino effect of Chelsea pulling out, Juve not in the mix, rumours about United going on, Arsenal, something, everything. It was like a domino of one after another coming through. I mean, how can something so big, so fundamental to the future of football, collapse within 48 hours?
So I think obviously there was the groundswell of opinion, and I have a newfound respect for James Corden, actually, after he put out a pretty good thing on his show, and I think it was stuff like that showed you, you know, he would go on a show where most of his audience wouldn't even know what he's talking about, but that showed you just how big this was, that he was prepared to talk about this on his show. But to come back to the fans and managers, I'm not convinced there wasn't something bigger at play here. I personally think the Premier League said, if you go, you're out. And I genuinely think that's the reason, because they wouldn't have cared about what the managers said or what the fans said, let's face it, because they never do. I genuinely think the reason this stopped is someone at the Premier League said, if you go, you're gone and you won't come back. And they realised they can't go out of their domestic league because they can't just play in, because they would have been banned by FIFA, they would have been banned by UEFA, and they would have just been playing in some ridiculous round-robin tournament amongst themselves that no one would have been interested in. So I do think there was something bigger at play. I think it was great the way everyone came out.
I don't think we should give them all too much credit for having these big plans and making these big grand statements. I think we work in the media and we work in TV. So what we do know is you should never, ever underestimate the incompetence of people.
there was a very good thread by Simon Cooper, a football writer, about how he'd spoken to Martin Jol a few years ago, and Martin Jol had basically said to him, you wouldn't believe how stupid the people are that run football. Essentially, like, most of the people that are as footballers as professionals are all very, very good. Then a lot of them become administrators, particularly in Europe. And these professional footballers just aren't any good at doing that.
I've worked in a corporate environment. You know, Aaron, you've worked at the BBC. Dan, you probably have over your, you know, years been into those places, right? But my first experience of working at a big corporate environment relatively recently, these people think and talk differently. They are apprentice candidates. The idiots you see on The Apprentice, right, you think you can't believe people really talk like that and do that. That is corporate culture. Well, I remember being in a meeting and a woman, let's call her Penny, said something. And I'm thinking, well, we'd all make fun of that in our world. Mm. We'd all make fun of that. No, they all thought Penny was a genius. But it was smack bang out of The Apprentice. So I don't think we should underestimate these people. I mean, these people actually had a template, if they bothered to look into how to bring forward this idea to get people on side. It is very reminiscent of what Kerry Packer was doing in the 70s with one-day cricket and cricketers. But what Kerry Packer did, the first thing he knew he had to do was to win over hearts and minds. So he was out there selling it, telling everybody what he was going to do. Also, why he was going to do it, a cause. Because he said cricketers were being restricted and they weren't being paid properly. And he set the ball rolling, so much to the effect that World Series was not a massive success, first of all, but it forced the authorities to go, well, that is the future. And the template was there, and these guys decided to send a press release out at 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday with the worst kind of PR plan imaginable. And I have to say, they talk about the PR plan and the company that they hired to do the PR, and here's where we should be suspicious, is a company called In-House Communications, based in London, who are responsible for putting that crappy logo together and the website, which looked like something I could do on Keynote, and I'm rubbish at Keynote, right? But their in-house communication company has done the PR for Boris Johnson winning the Mayor of London, right? So yesterday has these fan group meetings, that's the PR bit I'm all suspicious about. The government getting on side with what is a very easy win for them with red, what they will see as red wall voters. So the whole politics comes into it of the country. And these Britain, and I think Brexit, whatever you vote on it, is a factor in the mentality, because this country, I've argued about it for 5 years, 40 years, that we voted, rightly or wrongly, to be in charge of our own destiny. And what football was doing was it being something, core values to the identity of this country was being taken away by foreign owners run by Europe. And we just had a big row for 5 years about all that. So the political dynamic of it all created this huge snowball for them, as well as fans outside Chelsea, as well as talk sport radio lines, to go, this collapsed. But what a monumental mess up if you've got billions of pounds at stake, right, Aaron?
That's a lot of information to take in.
It is. It's a lot. I've been thinking
after
about
night,
it.
After a night of celebration, that's a lot of information to take in. The first thing I want to say is, it feels like grand sort of treachery, because effectively these guys have planned this. They've sat, they've talked about it. And I was actually thinking about this yesterday. They've obviously planned it. They've had this meeting with JP Morgan, where JP Morgan has said, yeah, we're going to whack up £4.5 billion of capital so you can get this off the ground, X, Y, Z. They've planned this meticulously. And yet people have mobilized. And mobilized seems to be sort of the word of the day. In a word of the week is people should mobilize. People are mobilized over the past 2 days, and they've disbanded this organization that they've formed, and they've taken all this time and all these power meetings and fucking nice suits and posh lunches and stuff, you know, and they've
basically, I know, but over
it. It's brilliant. It's
the fan power side of it obviously is fantastic, but I'm not sure if they have been meticulous organising this, because if they had...
Get £4.5 billion out of JP Morgan, I think you've got to be half decent.
That's a different side of things. That's a business side. That's not a meticulous plan of winning over the heart of minds or coming out with a cause or selling your thing. It looked like a land grab, a coup d'etat, a steal of our national game. When if they'd have come out and said, you know what, UEFA and FIFA, they're crooks and corrupt, aren't they? We need to do something about that. You know, the issues of racism, we're going to do something about that in our league. We'll ban people for a year. All these things that the major... If they'd come out and challenged the authorities in those ways, I think they would have got a hearing.
Are you saying they went about it the wrong way?
I mean, I'm saying it's incredible. It is incredible.
Yeah.
On a multi-billion pound plan, having... got, as you say, the JP Morgan on side and whoever else on side and your corporate lawyers. It is incredible that they ran this the way that they've ran it. I mean, it's I found it unbelievable.
I think you're absolutely right, Chris. I think with some better thinking, they could have essentially created their own Champions League with, as you say, with a kind of, because they do like to take the you know, they do like to sort of dress things up as, oh, we're taking the moral high ground, how they talked about, you know, protecting domestic leagues, etc. And I think you're right. If they had sort of been clever and smarter, they could have just effectively created a Champions League. I think they should have realized that there had to be some kind of in and out, you know, of it. And,
I mean, totally.
And if they'd had more of that in there, totally. I don't see how, because I can remember going back, you know, lots of people spoke about when the Premier League was announced, and I remember when the Premier League was announced, I wrote about it as my dissertation for my degree.
I wrote about European Super Leagues then, going, this was,
yeah, because
I wrote about anti-franchise football.
Yeah, so we all know it's coming.
But the thing is, there was a huge furore against the Premier League then. But the key thing, as everyone has said, is it was still going to be in and out of the Football League. And I think
it was still a meritocracy. Yeah, it was still exactly. On the pitch. It was still a sporting integrity.
And I think
the whole plan fell down straight from the get.
Whoa! The difference between the Premier League and this is that the Premier League wasn't a closed shop. There was relegation.
No, that's just, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
flipping Burnley, but Barnsley could get it.
But 40 clubs from the EFL, 40 clubs now have had an experience in the Premier League. Yeah. You know, we're old enough to remember the 80s when there was hardly any football on television. hooliganism, grounds were terrible. You know, the Premier League money has improved the experience, and there's a drop-off to that in other ways, but it's improved it, and there was always a meritocracy. Only in the last 15 years has the Champions League gone, we've got it because of the power and success of the Premier League, the import of foreign players, all those things have made it an effect. I've said this before, the global league kind of is. That, you know, Europe has become a thing where the top four are now involved and making that more competitive. And the fact is, you look at these clubs, as we said on Monday, they've mismanaged their whole footballing business side of things the last decade. And Leicester would have freaked them out. Arsenal would have been freaked out by being 10th. Spurs would be 8th. You know, going, how are we going to pay for all this? What am I going to do with this big stadium? All these things has freaked them out, and they've gone, money, grab it, coup.
Well, you look at Arsenal, and I look at Arsenal and Barcelona, and they're like, you know when you're a kid and you're off to like do something with your mates and your mum's like, take your brother with you, take your little brother with you, go on, take it. And you're like, oh, no, I don't want it. And you see Arsenal and Barcelona just coming up the rear and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake, tag along then, go on. Arsenal, come on, man. By the way, if you can hear a little chime, that's my washing machine. I don't know what the hell it's doing. But yeah, Arsenal, Barcelona are skin. Barcelona haven't got a pot to piss in, let alone anything. So we know why Barcelona did it. But Arsenal, I mean, I'm not one usually to side with Adrian Durham. He's a colleague. He's someone I see a lot and get on with him. But he's right about Arsenal. They're not an elite club anymore. They're fucking shambles, mate. Phone West Ham United. The Pawn Brothers would love to be in that, you know, European league.
I mean, Arsenal, Kroenke, you can tell he doesn't really care about them because of what he's only started to care about them in the last couple of years because you realize he's losing money and they're becoming a problem because they're not in the top four and they're not competing. You know, Arsene Wenger was keeping them in the top four in the same way the Glazers, the last decade, have only spent any money when it's needed to get back into the top four. I mean, when you think about who these people are and their football mismanagement, you know, Ed Woodward signs off 650K a week on goalkeepers. These people are clueless about football. They're clueless. And they've had their arses handed to them. Brilliant.
Hey,
and
of course, signs off 120 grand a week on fucking Phil Jones.
Well,
Phil Jones. That's the thing. Funny enough, I was with my pal last week and I was just like sat there. You know, you just sat there and you're like thinking, okay, has Phil Jones actually even played for us this season? And I actually took the time to go out on a Wikipedia and look on the little grid there. He hasn't played a game. Release the fucker.
They could still get a £5 million fee for him and claim some of the contract money they gave him when he wasn't playing in the team. Yada, yada, yada. But there's loads of things we all know that we discussed on this podcast for at least as long as I've been doing it, the last 5 years or so, about the mismanagement of Woodward. And, of course, last night, during the Chelsea-Brighton game, the message came through that Ed Woodward was resigning. Ding dong. Aaron, that's a day we've been waiting for, right?
On my life, I nearly crashed my car. So basically, I got an email about it and I was like, bollocks. Then my cousin texts me and he's like, is it true? And I was like, I haven't got a clue. Then we got another email about it. I was like, oh my God, it's actually true. We knew this was coming a few days ago. Woodward sold his house in Manchester and he's moved to London permanently. Like he's out of the area.
Yeah, there were rumours a few weeks ago that he'd be leaving in the summer.
Yeah, this was always coming, and now it's been sped up. I think it's kind of a way of like a bit of a good PR move from the club, just to say, don't hate us, we're getting rid of him.
Well, here's
at the end of the season, but it is a bit of a PR move.
Well, Dan, he's always been like Glazer's puppet, right? And Glazers are really used. You can say there's an argument that Glazer's getting rid of him and announcing this now. He's the sacrificial lamb. Let's no mistake. United led this Super League thing. They were thoroughly at the forefront of making it happen. And Woodward would have been that man to coordinate it, which is probably one reason he should get sacked for how badly coordinated it's all been. But the Glazers, haven't they just used Ed as Ed Woodward? I'll use his full name. As a scapegoat for these events. And when really they've not yet come out with an apology in their statement. And isn't this the most important thing? The time for United fans to keep the pressure on, because this is our best chance of getting rid of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Ed's head on a stick is kind of fun for us, but at the end of the day, they'll get another yes man in, and they'll get someone else in to do their bidding as long as they're still there. So the most important thing is, as you say, is that the pressure stays on them. I mean, the question is whether or not this kind of, if you think about it, essentially, this has told them they can't do what they wanted to do. I don't know whether Woodward would have been, you know, necessarily behind it. He might not have thought it was a particularly clever idea, but obviously the Glazers would have told him that it's a good idea. Because I think he's not stupid, Woodward. He's many things, but he's not stupid when it comes to knowing, I think, about that where good the game's bad, going. Yeah. However,
I know marketing, but he's clueless of football. The last 8 years tell you that. Clueless.
Yeah,
but I think he knows when there's a shitstorm brewing.
But he knows. I think what he knows is he knows about the business of football. He might not know about football in terms of the way to run the club on the pitch. I think he knows how to run it off the pitch. That's kind of undeniable. But the question is: Will the Glazers now think, well, we've hit the ceiling on how much we can, our earning potential out of this thing. And is it the time, once the kind of pandemic's over and everything hopefully gets back to normal, is it the time to cut and run and get out of Dodge?
That sounds like a very good time and things for us to discuss in the second half of the podcast. So join us after these messages when we'll find out what we think we should do to get the Glazers out.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen, check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to the Manchester United podcast for this very special Super League edition with me, Chris Curley, Aaron Paul and Dan Riley. Dan was just talking about how we get the Glazers out. Aaron, how do we get the Glazers out?
There was a famous song about that, wasn't there? And my colleagues at Five like condemned it last year. The fact that United fans are singing about people going to die and stuff like that. We've been singing it for years. The fact of the matter is that, and I was quite involved with like the Green and Gold campaign in 2010. For every one of me that will sing the songs, fly the flags, you name it, there are 5 or 10 tourists who will go, I'll take your place as a season ticket. Oh, don't worry about it, I'll take your place. And that is the fundamental issue we have.
Is that why it fizzled out 10 years ago?
Of course it is, because at the end of the day, fans are fickle. They're not all like us. They're not all like us who stick by them, thick or thin. I mean, don't get me wrong, my loyalty was severely tested this week. And I'll tell you about that in a minute, because I really want to know about your opinions on how you felt this weekend. But the attitude was, yes, they're not spending on the team. There was a period of time where we were linked with Wesley Snyder and Ezekiel Garay and stuff like that around the 2010s. It's like, we're not signing anyone. We're not signing a midfielder. Bam, 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 bam. And that anti-Glazer movement went crazy. It really, really blew up. I remember every match day, there were green and gold banners. They were being taken off us. There were scarves twirling. It was great. It felt like a real sort of rebel alliance. But as soon as we sign a player or two, David De Gea, Phil Jones, who was billed to be the next Duncan Edwards, we sign players, we spent money. That summer, the 2011 summer, spent a lot of money. And people forget, people are fickle. Glazers could not, they might not spend money in one window, but then they'll realise, shit, we need to make a marquee signing. And it'll appease the fans, and they did that. That plus, at the end of the day, again, for every one of me or you, there's five tourists that will take our place. How I look at this grand Super League thing is that the money we put in as fans, say your season ticket's 750 quid, mine's 780, yeah? 780 times two, 1,500 quid a year. When I go to Old Trafford, I don't buy a pint in there. I don't buy a pie in there. I don't buy anything from the megastore. My only cost is a match program, £3. And to be fair, if I got it posted, I think it works out cheaper. Yeah, so it could be cheaper. My cost is £3 times, call it 50 games a season. That's £150. On top of my £1,500, that's £1,650 a year. Now, my £1,650 a year is not worth it to them because my net spend should be more. They want people coming in, spamming the fuck out of the club shop.
Well, I think,
you know, spending. And they don't want the regular fan. Let's be fair.
They don't need, because we're all legacy fans, right?
Absolutely. So very, very, very quickly, there was talk about season ticket holders walking away, basically. Jack in your season ticket. The slight issue we got is we jack in our season ticket. There's a queue of people down the road who'll have them. Who have them, and they will sell the ground that 2-3 times over. You know, I had a caller on a show the other day, called himself a United fan. Honestly, I felt fucking sick. He turns around and he goes, "Oh, I only go for the big games." And I was like, "You're a fucking idiot. You are the problem, mate. You are the problem." You know, it should be, the attitude should be Burton or Barcelona. It don't matter. You go and support us, go and support the club. But these are the kind of fans that they want. And until the actual core, I don't like using the word hardcore, the core group mobilise again, the core group wake up again. And I think it's time for Duncan Drasdale and the supporters trust to fire their machine back up again. Nothing will happen.
I agree with a lot of that. I think, you know, in 2010, around that period, we never had Ferguson on side. And it was also our best period on the pitch ever in terms of getting all to those Champions League finals. So all those, like, I'd say you've got the hardcore, but the next level, the regular season ticket holders, the to cause a really big fuss and a consistent, constant fuss and pain. We're like, oh, is this really that bad? What could come next? You know, maybe that was one, as you said before, we were still buying players, we moved on. And then Ferguson obviously left. Ferguson coming out on Sunday was a big thing as well.
Do you know where it all started, by the way? It all started when we replaced Ronaldo with flipping Obertan.
Yeah, well, that was, but then Ferguson bought into the, well, Ferguson bought into the transfer policy.
Big head.
If Ferguson bought into that and replaced him with Valencia, bought Ashley Young, you know, we'd sold him for 80 million, and Phil Jones.
Well, no, that was pre-Ashley Young. That was when we signed Valencia, Obertan, and flipping.
Valencia came in the season after Ronaldo left.
So Ronaldo left that summer. We signed Valencia and Obertan. And Michael Owen.
And then I think, and Michael Owen, that's right. The Fred Dalot Grant version of that.
Basically, yeah.
So as you say about these fans, and that's where I'm torn about, because I've
fans,
been...
There you go, fans. Fans or supporters? That's the key question.
Well, that is true, but you see, the talk about the stadium, right, and the fans, and how, and who's there, they need a full ground to an extent, but they consider the fans as props. The fans are nothing I've bought as props, and as I said on Monday in the podcast, they've been bought off over the last 10 years with frozen ticket prices, promise of a singing section, promise of safe standing, they've been bought off. I think the events of the past 48 hours, though, are going to mobilise those regular season ticket holders that can make it difficult in the ground, which is a visual spectacle both outside and in. And that's where I'm torn on whether to keep my season ticket or not, because then I can be inside the ground trying to do something about it. I don't know if I should. I'm not convinced I should. And give them nothing at all and kind of freeze them out with cash. I don't know what to do.
I'll tell you something. Yeah, this is very quickly. Sunday was depressing because I thought we played some really good football and I'm sat there watching it. And, you know, my mum's come up to me and she's asked me the whole situation. And I said, I think that's it. I've always said if United enter into a European Super League, I will walk away. It's franchise football. I'm anti-franchise football. CEO of a Football League club, an EFL club, goes to me, you bring me your United season ticket and I'll give you a free season ticket to our club. The CEO of a club. And I'm sat there, I'm like, what the hell? And he goes, we'd rather have a fan like you that back the club and spend money. Your money's worth, you know, we want your money. It's worth more here.
Oh, I'd be off to York City with my nephews. I mean, that was the thing I was most upset about, that I wouldn't give them that Old Trafford experience. I was done with it on Sunday. Dan, what do we do? What do we do to get Glazers out? Do we get keep our season tickets and protest inside the ground? What kind of pressure can we put on them to get rid of them? Because this, they might go, as you said, this is the time to maybe cash out, or they'll see it through because they've seen it through before.
I think it's difficult. I mean, the only way you get rid of someone is by you know, starving them of what they need, starving of the oxygen, which is money. I think that in a weird way, the pandemic's going to help them, because I think everyone's so desperate to get back to doing the things they love, the normality of going to a game, that people will go. And as we know, we've discussed this before, that being addicts, we are not the only ones that are addicts. And if we give up if we knock it on the head, then there's going to be someone else coming in. Like I say, I think it's just whether or not, I think, if I'm being brutally honest, I think the Glazers will go when they decide to go. You know, the green and gold campaign never really kind of got the traction, unfortunately, because people just couldn't give it up.
Don't forget, though, social media wasn't as powerful as it was then.
That's true.
There was no Twitter, there was no Instagram, there was flipping Facebook, and that was you, your auntie, your uncle.
That's true. I just think there needs to be more done outside the ground, before the game starts, after the game.
Right. Yesterday, I subscribed to Red News. Subscribe to Red News. It's 40 quid a season. Pay for people like Barney. Barney's such an important person to this club. Go and buy Red News. Go and spend money with the Supporters Trust. They've got their stall outside on Samat Busby Way. Go and buy a scarf. Go and buy a pin badge. Help fund these good organisations. I'll be honest with you, mate. Apart from my season ticket, I don't spend a penny with the club. I will, if I want to buy a shirt, I will wait until Classic Football Shirts have them. I'll wait, because I don't want to put money in their hands. If I have to pay for the ticket, you know what? I have to pay for the fucking ticket. It is what it is. But support Red News, support the fanzine, support the indies who have the same ideologies as you, who have the same backing as you. And
I think this is the time when we really need to, all of football actually needs to continue, not think of this as like a 3-day fad, is to mobilise, get organised, talk to one another about what we can do to stop this thing from happening, because it's not gone away forever. This thing always comes around. This is probably the closest it's felt to something happening. We've still got all the issues at UEFA and governance. The Champions League format they're proposing in 2024 is not good. You know, these clubs were getting a massive, big gilded bonus anyway through that system, and we're greedy for more. I think it'd be interesting what they do now. How does the Premier League clubs, the other 14, and the other UEFA clubs respond to them? I mean, on Monday, this is what's crazy. On Monday, the 12 sent letters leaving the European Club Association. Today, they're sending applications back in. I mean, these people...
It's funny how City have been welcomed back like, you know, a long-lost family member.
I just think this hasn't gone away. We've got to keep the pressure on. We've got to find every way to mobilise and unite together so it's a coordinated plan. Because this is our best chance, folks. This is our best chance in 16 years to get the Glazers out of Manchester United.
I'm tickled by the image of Ed Woodward chasing the postman to try and intercept his letter that he sent to the European Club Association.
Knowing Ed, he probably sent it second class.
He'll probably be able to get it. Exactly.
He probably never got there.
Or he didn't put enough postage on it in the first place.
Definitely didn't put enough postage.
It'll be sent back.
I'm for one, I said initially they should stick 30-point back deductions on the Premier League, either this season or next season, similar to how Luton Town were fucked by the EFL in 2009. Whack a 30-point deduction on them. And I'm saying United as well. I also said that all English clubs should be kicked out of Europe this season. Give our place to Granada. Give Cities to Dortmund, and Chelsea's to whoever they played in the Champions League. Punish us. But they won't. And I'll tell you why they won't. Because UEFA can't bear the fact that West Ham and Leicester and Wolves will be in the Champions League next year.
Yeah, they'd hate that for a year.
Will be in the Europa League. It'll cheapen their competition next year.
That's what they think where it all came from after Leicester won the league. Dan, before we go, the players got involved yesterday. I mean, one of the things I did leave out of that timeline of what happened after Pep's press conference was that Marcus Rashford posted a tweet. And I said in our WhatsApp group, don't worry, lads, he's here. It'll be sorted within 48 hours. It wasn't 48 hours. It was 8 hours. How do you think the players reacted online and what would they have done to kind of put the pressure on the club?
I think there were some very, very good responses, actually, the sort of positive power of social media. I thought Luke Shaw, who seems to have kind of, I don't know what's happened to Luke Shaw, but his
fatherhood, Dad, fatherhood. I think it's fatherhood.
Ah, there you go. I thought his words were really good, really smart, measured. Marcus, obviously, a man of few words, really, just sort of like tweeted the picture. Let's not underestimate the power of Chucky's headband. I do believe spoke about Chucky's headband, and I think it does have some mystical powers. I think the players were smart, because let's not forget they're employees at the end of the day. So, you know, they're kind of they are under contract, and they have to be careful because of, you know, contracts they have, and, you know, they would be told by their agents to be measured, and I think the response was good. As Aaron has alluded to there, he might be able to explain more. Yeah, Harry Maguire, my captain. I've always been a Harry Maguire fan.
I have too. I've mainly defended him.
I think, by the way, you talk about contracts and stuff like that. I disagree about the whole contracts thing. You know, at the end of the day, if a football club was on fire, I'm guaranteed the only people that are getting paid are the players. Their contracts are the most watertight, lockdown contracts you'll ever see in your life. They couldn't give a shit if they speak out. But the fact of the matter is, they know, fuck our contracts. The fans are what drive them on. They're going to get abused if they back this. So I think it was an element of self-preservation. Going back to Luke Shaw, you asked what's changed. Fatherhood, and I think he's been banned from like Uber Eats and Deliveroo as well. So good news on that front. But Harold Maguire, you've stepped up. You know what? We're proud of you, mate. We're proud of you. And shout out Ander Herrera, my sweet prince. I love you so much. I miss you every single day.
I've never understood your love for Herrera.
I mean, him and McSauce in midfield. Oh, I love him. Ole Ander Herrera. I love you, mate. And Lunch Lady Doris, of course. Marcus Rashford, you know, he's feeding kids and he's fighting against...
When Marcus gets involved, whatever it is, it's over. It's just over.
He's en route for an NBA, mate. MBE,
if the kid scores the hat-trick, scores the winning goal in the Euros in the summer, and I think people have underestimated him in that England side about how important he is with his pace and ability to do everything. He ruined that Burnley right-back in the centre-up in the second half on Sunday. I think, you know, I'm pleased the players did what they did. I think they were fortunate they had 2 days off, so, you know, and other teams were playing, so the focus was on them at the time. That was useful. But I hope that I think a lot more of what they did is going to come out over the next couple of days, I think. And that'll be interesting to read and hear about. And what Ollie would have said. Because what Ollie learned is that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer gave Manchester United arguably its greatest moment in the European competition, right? What Ollie learned that his bosses weren't prepared to tell him what's going on about a competition they don't think they should be in. What Ollie learned was that what Ollie learned was the incredible... If you didn't know now what the owners think of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he definitely does. Because they treat him with contempt and disrespect. Absolutely. And I think we all should be Ollie in on Ollie's side. Because while Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is still in that job, regardless of what's going on that pitch, the values and the culture of Manchester United that we all hold dear will be in play.
I was saying to my pal yesterday, the most depressing thing about it is we're actually playing really good football at the moment. It sort of ends on a high, if you like. Shout out Gary Neville. Gary Neville, you know what? Like, he was never the most fashionable. He was never someone, everyone sort of saw him as that ratty, yappy little bastard. He was like a little Jack Russell. But you know what? Shout out to him. And I never, ever, ever want to say this again. Shout out Jordan Henderson and the Scousers, because they did their bit as well. And you know what? Jordan Henderson for calling all the captains together and saying, guys, we've got to sort this shit out.
Henderson's been brilliant this morning, posting about what they need to do now is get on with the racism issue. And that's absolutely what we should put our attention on. I think Gary and Jamie were fantastic on Monday Night Football. Not only was it great telly, but it mobilised the nation that on Monday night. It mobilised all the fans. Because we know Gary and Jamie, if they weren't playing and being club legends, they'd be on the terraces with us. And we know that. And it comes across. And they've still got the heart of what it means to be a football supporter in their every thought. And now we can concentrate on the football, because tonight City are away at Aston Villa. And you never know.
Villa.
We might, if they get beat tonight, we might have a title race to talk about next week.
Well, we were in the same position. I mean, what was it? Was it 2011? They sort of overtook us in this position where there was
2012
games to go, six games to go, 8 points of difference.
The Aguero season.
It could happen. It could happen.
I'm not ruling out, because I felt like the season was over on Sunday night, and now I feel okay with something to play for. Aaron, Dan, I think what a good chat to get it all out of our system. The events of the last 48 hours. Thanks for joining us on an emergency pod. I'll leave us by saying that, I think the Glazers are going to hang on to this and their ownership of Manchester United, like Kate Winslet does a plank of wood in the Atlantic Ocean. So we need to keep the pressure on. Find your ways, talk to your mates, coordinate it. Do what Aaron says and get hold of those, go to Red News and Barney and fund those organisations. That's what we have to do. We have never had a better chance. I've said it before, I'll say it again, to get the Glazers out. That's what we have to do.
Don't buy in the fucking club shop. No one needs a United pencil case or dressing gown or some crap. It will all be on sale in Classic Football Shirt. The good shit will go to Classic Football Shirt. Support an indie like them instead.
Full disclosure, I do own a dressing gown, which was a gift.
That's noncy behaviour, that.
No, it's nice. I'll wear it next time for you.
Which when are not fastened properly results in another kind of full disclosure.
Well, if you're lucky, lads, if you're lucky, when this goes to video, thanks for joining us. Remember one thing before we go. Come on, you Reds.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.